Hello there, and welcome to the latest episode of Stiff Takers Snapshots podcast. Joining me this evening is Rich.
Hello there. I wasn't expecting you to come to me first.
Well, I like to mix it up. From behind the mic, we've got Tim.
Hello there.
And old behind the mic, we've got Sean.
Hello there. How are we all?
I'd forgotten that you used to record sometimes. Until I just start waffling.
I literally recorded for a full year doing two episodes a week. Thank you very much.
No, I just totally forgot. It's like completely went out of my head. Yeah, because you were the first one who stopped editing everyone.
No. Well, I mean, I did some editing, just not very much.
You let all the naughtiness through. You like the weekend stepdad.
Yes. Until Tim came back and put some professionalism on it. Like,
yeah. So this week we're obviously going to talk about Worlds. Everyone here went except me, sad times. Still, technically, I went undefeated, so, you know.
Oh, I mean, weirdly, Liam was asked after quite a lot, but you weren't.
I don't care. Liam's not here because he's poorly. I think he's just embarrassed because he didn't make day two at Worlds again.
Didn't make day one at Worlds.
He didn't make day one.
We don't need to tell anyone that part. No, seriously, though. Shall we just talk about your experience? Do you want to talk about your travel getting there first?
Oh, definitely.
And how it'll... Yeah.
No, because so, Sean and Tim went business class and I travelled cattle class. I had a terrible time.
I did see Sean's seat. It looked very comfortable. Go for it then, Sean.
I was going to say, me and Tim had a fantastic time up in business class. It was very, very nice. We had champagne.
Just a little...
Yeah, there was champagne, there was cocktails. Like,
I bet you it was Prosecco.
Probably. I can't tell the difference. I'm quite low class, you see, so I don't really know.
Might have even been Asti Spumante, but it was fizzy and white and tasted vaguely alcoholic.
Yep.
Oh, it's the same way of making it. It's just not made in the same place. So that makes champagne is if it's made in that type of part of the world.
Outside of people's individual like seating arrangements, the travel was really like it was quite cool because we started off in Manchester. Like me and Sean met up at Bolton train station, and then when we got to and Pete as well, Sean's brother, and then when we got to Manchester Airport, we ran into Tim as we were walking towards the terminal, and then we ran into Matt as we were kind of at the gate. And then when we flew to Dublin, we ran into Connor and Jojo, Jonathan McKinstry. So, you know, like the group kind of expanded as we kind of got closer to Chicago. And then, you know, you could see that there were other nerds kind of around as well. There were a lot of people in black hoodies with Warhammer cases and stuff in their hands and this kind of stuff traveling. So, you know, even though we were traveling a long way, you could see that there were people both on the way there and on the way back who weren't in our group. But also we all had, like, obviously all the Facebook groups and Messenger apps and everything. So, you know, the Welsh lads, the other Scottish lads, all, you know, all the 186 and everybody from down south, everybody was kind of pinging, oh, we're at the next step, we're at the next step, we're traveling, you know. Hilarious jokes, asking Elliot why he was in Iceland, all this kind of stuff. Didn't you know Worlds is in Chicago when he said, I'm in Iceland. We were a bit weird, but he did a hop flight. So, yeah, it was really cool. And it kind of got the vibe going for the holiday that, you know, we were going to a place with lots of people and started to build excitement kind of early doors. So it was really cool.
It was cool because I kept seeing, obviously, we're seeing like picture updates. And every time you see a new picture, there's like a new person in the picture.
Yeah.
And all people you know. So it's like, oh, I'm so jealous. So the flight bit's boring anyway. We know Sean and Tim had a better time than everyone else, but we don't want to boast about it. How was it once you got there? Was it easy enough to get to where you needed to go?
I'm gonna say so, yeah. So I think like Tim had arranged for Ed to pick up half of us because Ed had been there a while. The rest of us just got an Uber. So my first experience of Ubers, and it's just like, it was just so phenomenally handy. It was ridiculous. Got an Uber there, got a hotel, about 9, 10 in the evening, dumped bags, went for food and met up with everyone else. Like all the Scottish were there and chunks of the 186 were there as well.
Yeah. We got to the, like through the airport, because we pre-cleared in Dublin, Which is weird, by the way. There's like these really savage American border guards in Dublin. And it's just like, I'm thinking to myself, I'm an Irish citizen. You can't talk to me like this. And I was thinking, no, because this little bit of Dublin airport is America.
Did you find, when I was there, they were so polite and nice.
No, it's very official and very serious. Like until they realize you're a harmless nerd. Like I eventually made him crack a smile by saying that he said, "What's the purpose of your trip?" And I said, "Pleasure." And he said, What are you doing?" And I said, "I'm here to play with toy spaceships along with a bunch of other 40-something year old men." And he just laughed and I was like, "Right, we're fine now, it's all good." And then I accidentally said yes when he asked if I was carrying gifts for people instead of just saying no, which is what you're supposed to do. Because then he said, "What gifts are you carrying?" And I was like, tokens and stuff, cards and things for aforementioned nerds. And he was like, "Right, okay, grand, crack on." But so that brief moment of panic that you're going to pond it up and accidentally end up in a small white room.
I was too busy looking at all the flags because I didn't quite know where to go apart from the 105 American flags leading me there. Like, yep, it's definitely this way.
But yeah, no, we got there. Like Ed Gold picked a bunch of us up. The other half got Ubers and, you know, took us to Mainstay Suites, which was exactly as budget. Charming was the word that Rory used when he arrived. It was like
very 90s is what I was charming. Describing. Like,
it's very, it's very, elements of it hadn't been cleaned since the 90s was the other bit of it.
No, so I don't think I've seen a microwave that was size.
Radical.
Yeah. It was it was a hipster paradise of beige. It really was something. I mean, like, it was fine, like, it was comfortable enough for what we had it for, and we weren't in it a lot other than on the Wednesday evening when we all ended up hanging out in the reception bit before we went for food. So it was like about, I don't know, 30 people or something, like, drinking and having good crack. It was good fun, but other than that, we were barely in it other than to go and sleep, so it's fine.
And to drink coffee at 5 a.m. in the morning when all our clocks were buggered.
Yeah, which was basically the whole week.
Yeah. There's many trips to IHOP at 4:30 in the morning.
Ben's going, "Oh, I remember IHOP at 5 a.m. Oh,
No, because we didn't get IHOP when me and Tim were in Minnesota, weren't we?
Yeah, yeah.
But there was like a food truck sort of thing. It's a really famous one there. It's actually in the Mighty Ducks 1 film, if anyone remembers, with that sat eating pancakes. But that's where we went for pancakes and racist rants. But no, that was a bit scary, actually, because they were going about someone with a gun, and we're like, "Ooh." But anyway.
I'm in America.
Let's talk more about Adepticon. So once you got there, what did you do? How easy was it to get in?
That was fine.
Yeah, it was like $6 Uber. Like, we would have walked it, but we didn't quite know how to get across the freeway. Basically, like, we had to go like over a bank, and we couldn't see pedestrians walking. And it's just like, we were already playing a lot of Frogger with the like medium sized road, which was like 8 lanes. Then, but we didn't want to risk the freeway, so Ubers were really cheap. So that was quite good.
Yeah, the little medium hop, like, Frogger. The little hop, as Sean said, it's like between $6 and $8 most of the time. And Adepticon had it kind of sorted. So you went in, we went and checked in, was it Wednesday after
night
food? Yeah, Wednesday night after food. When most of the lines had cleared because we kind of left it for an hour, but because Americans could get the passes posted out to them. There was a lot of people just literally walking up, picking up a swag bag, and then walking, like, leaving again. And if you didn't have a pass, you just went up to a table with the correct letter for your surname on it, which meant I had to stand in a queue while there were three members of staff standing, not doing anything, while somebody had a problem, and there was like 10 people standing behind the queue for P, and it was like, oh, come on. It was like,
that just annoyed me. It was just like, come on, it's like just basic person stuff. Just say, "Do you want to step here and I'll look for it?" That's all it needed to do. And it was just like, no, it was against the system.
They had them all in one box, so they couldn't have two sets of fingers going through one box at a time or something, but basically, by the time problem child at the front had disappeared, the rest of us kind of rattled through really quickly. And then that was it, basically. There was a bit of admin weirdness about kind of signing up for side events and stuff like that. But that was apparently an AMG not communicating properly with Adepticon rather than an Adepticon issue. So, I mean, Adepticon know what they're doing. They've run a lot. And while some of the processes are a little bit, like, weird, and, you know, you always get the odd power trip in volunteer, there were some people standing in doorways, literally not letting you walk through a doorway. So you had to walk 20 meters to the left through a doorway and then back along to the other side of the person. And it was just, there was literally no reason other than that person had been told that, you know, they wanted people to follow a certain system. And it was like, yeah, but the hall's empty now, mate. And I want to be just the other side of you. And it's like, no, go round. It was like, right, okay, whatever. It was fine. But yeah, it was fine. Adepticon was good. I don't know, like, Sean, you and Tim, the two of you got the swag bags. What was what was that like?
Do you want to go, Tim?
Yeah, I mean, I think the swag bag was a little bit disappointing compared to what it was last year, but they did say that it was going to be between, because last year they had like a small, medium and large, and the large was phenomenal last year. They did say that it was going to kind of be between the medium and the large. So I was kind of hoping for some big AMG stuff, but we got, I think, a Shatterpoint, I don't know what they call it, a squad set, squad pack, got the Ewok characters for Legion. Yeah, it was all right. I mean, I'll probably end up flogging a fair bit of it, but I can probably recoup my ticket costs for most of it. Nothing really in it for me specifically, I don't think, bar the bits I added on.
You'll see, I think, like, there was some Marvelous Crisis Protocol in there as well. I think, like, a couple of the new packs that just came out that month, there was a Combat Patrol size box in Games Workshops. It was either like for AOS 40k or for BattleTech, which was quite cool. There was a paintbrush, and then bits and bobs. I mean, it definitely make you. I think it was like £90. It worked out of that, like, you could definitely make that back. Comfortably. And there's also a giant tank game as well, which was like the big box that everyone got. So yeah, like I said, if you're like a generic war gamer, it was quite cool because you got loads of cool little stuff. But if you were after something for like one specific game, you might have been a bit disappointed. But yeah, I quite liked it.
Is there nothing exclusive in it?
I don't think so. I mean, there's a couple of like Adepticon bits, but I don't think they were exclusive.
No.
It looked to me, as somebody who didn't get it, and this might be me just not being a big wargamer, but it looked to me like a lot of people were kind of like, this is a bunch of stock that we've got in the warehouse that's not shifting, so let's put it in there.
I think it's a mixture. So I think you are right in some points, specifically the Games Workshop stuff. Mm. But the big tank game, they were obviously, this is a new game, we want to push it, therefore we're going to put it in.
It's the big tank game, sure.
It's Flames of War, sort of Gale Force 9 repackaged thing. So it's just basically just tanks. So you could have, I think, British versus German, sort of World War II. And then it was American versus Soviets, which I'm not sure if it was end of World War II, Cold War. But yeah, it was some. Yeah, I mean, it was all right. I mean, I think it. I think, did it retail at 45 or retail at 75? I forget now.
Not really.
Yeah, something like that. It was like a giant box of stuff. It was a giant box of tanks, basically.
Yeah.
It was the thing that caused everybody problems getting it home because it was basically the size of a suitcase.
Really?
I mean, yeah. it wasn't that big, but it was like a large board game sized box. So
I take it was like a starter set, was it?
Yeah, essentially, yeah.
Yeah.
It retails, so it's £60 RRP, £54 from Element at the moment. So you know, it's fine. Like if somebody wants it, then you know, I should be able to stick it on eBay and sell it or whatever, and I don't think I'll be using it. It's just, I think, just it's Flames of War, but just sort of a tank version of the game. So it's 15 mil, I think it is.
But it's fair, I guess. Yeah, it's probably not for you guys, really, but you know, you sell it on. That's why you bought it, didn't you?
Well, I bought on the off chance that we might get something, useful, which I guess, you know, the shatter point might be, considering we've got lots of shatter point inbox that we've never played with. But yeah.
We keep saying we're going to do it.
Well, I think Adam wants MCP bits off me, and I'm sure I'll be able to find some that wants the Legion bits.
Yeah. Like I say, the Combat Patrol for Games Workshop will be useful in my Space Wolf army, so that's not bad. So
yeah, I've already passed that on, so I'm in someone's good books for that.
Should we get onto the X-Wing bit then, guys? So obviously Tim wasn't involved in the last chance qualifier. Rich and Sean were. Mm. Who wants to talk about it first?
I think we should go.
Do you want to start off with how it was like signing up, how it was run, things like that first, before we go on to personal performances for the day? So how was it?
As I say, Rich, would you like to rant about this? Or
So there's a couple of things that happened at the start of each of the days, which I'll talk about. So you all might as well go on mute and put your feet up and maybe go and make yourself a drink while I talk. breathe
it's
in.
Like here we come.
So the first thing that happened was during registration, they did I'm going to call it weird because I don't understand why they did this. They did a dummy draw at the start of the day, like before we arrived. So when you turned up to register, you didn't go and register with a judge and say, I'm here, and hand your sheet over. You went and sat at the table that you'd been assigned in the dummy draw. And so you couldn't mix with your friends, because if you stood up to walk around, the judges were constantly doing announcements saying, why are you not sitting at your table? Sit at your tables. Don't stand up or walk around. Sit at your tables so that we can get registration done. Registration didn't start. So we were all there for 8 o'clock. Registration didn't actually start until about 9:30. When they actually started doing it, it went relatively quickly. But registration was a team of judges walking around the tables, making sure that both players were there, taking a copy of each person's list and checking that copy against the other copy they held to make sure they were the same. Now, they weren't validating that the lists were legal. They were literally just reading down them to make sure that both lists said the same thing. So as a result, we didn't actually start playing the LCQ until gone 10 o'clock, having been sitting there for nearly 2 hours, not really able to talk to our friends because we had to talk to the people that were around us, which was fine because, you know, you got to talk to people from different parts of the world. You know, there's some people from Texas around me, some people from different parts of the world, and it was very interesting and stuff. But like, ultimately, I'd have liked to be going and saying hello to, you know, the Welsh lads that were down, and, you know, the Southerners that were down, and bunch of the other people that were playing the LCQ or in the warm-up event, you know. So I had people walking past and waving at me, and every time I went to stand up, it felt like somebody said, oh, don't stand up, you've got to sit down. Otherwise, if they walk past, you'll not be there. And I could not understand for the life of me why they did the registration that way. And I'm sure there's a reason, but it made no sense why they didn't just have a desk that you went up to and you said, I've signed up and I'm here. And then an hour later, at 9 o'clock, after they finished it, they go, first pairings are up, everybody find your table. Like, it, I can't think of a reason why. So that was the first thing that happened. The second thing that happened was that at the start of it, the TO, so Chris Allen, stood up and said words to the effect of, this is a game where lots of people will often help you to do things, but your opponents do not have your best interests at heart. You should not trust them. So if they offer to move your ship for them, you should not let them. They do not have your best interests at heart. If anything is close, call a judge, because remember, your opponent does not have your best interests at heart. So he basically said, your opponents are going to cheat. And I understand why he's saying this, because there are people in the X-Wing community who basically push the edges of things to try and make sure that they win games. But it put a certain cast on the rounds where people were playing for, like, where you were still in. Like, so if you hadn't lost, to the point where I looked around at one point and I saw five judges busy, five people with their hands in the air, not playing because they were waiting for a judge to come and execute a one bank that was going to bump, just to make sure it was perfectly lined up. You can see it, and we'll talk about the actual Worlds event, but you can see it right through to the final, where as soon as the ships get into close contact with each other, they started just getting the judges to execute all the moves. The only thing the players were doing basically was setting dials and rolling dice. I hate it, and I hated it. I hated it in my first game, and I hated it in some of my other games as well, basically, where it was like you felt like you couldn't do anything. I've since found out that the judges were apparently told as well that they weren't allowed to touch any ships when they were doing arc checks and calls. So unless they were accurately marking ships up to be replaced so that they could do an arc check, which meant that some of the judges were hovering like bullseye checks, like from 5 inches above. They were like trying to estimate where the bullseye was by hovering the template above the ships, rather than marking ships off, because they were told not to put their fingers on ships, not to move.
Why was that?
Because in case they get nudged. In case they get nudged, basically. There were a couple of instances where the judges were called over fairly early in the day. I think of World itself, not the LCQ, but it probably happened in the LCQ as well, where they did a will pin tar, basically. They marked everything up. They put everything back really carefully. They went to lift the final templates away, and everything exploded and flew miles across the room. And they basically said, sorry, and handed the people a stack of prize tickets and said, there's nothing we can do about it. We'll put it back as good as we can, but here you go. Materially impacted the outcome of games as well, from the couple of instances that I've heard of. So, yeah, they basically took the whole community, we're playing a game together, aspect of X-Wing and threw it out and basically said, whoever it is that you're playing against is a cheat. Now, the thing to add here is that 95% of the people that were in the room just went, whatever, we're going to play the game the normal way. But there were enough people in the room who were saying, no, we're going to play it in this way. And there were rumors that some relatively well-known talented players were making judge calls every round to get somebody to come over and move ships, particularly for them, while simultaneously constantly offering to move their opponent's ships for them. So just like gaming the new rule almost to try and, you know, limit or speed up the round of the pace of play. So it was very kind of, it added an unnecessary edge. And having been in a lot of big events where this kind of thing hasn't been in place, I don't think it added anything, and I think it took away more than it added. You know, we've had system opens with 600 people in them that haven't had this kind of ridiculous thing. You know, we've had worlds before where, you know, you've been able to watch two top level players playing a really good game of X-Wing, and you've just been watching, and it's been great. The final of this Worlds was like the ultimate of, now we don't trust anybody to do anything. So, you know, you saw the judges coming in and marking things up and moving things really delicately and gently. And it was impressive to watch them in action, like genuinely how precise they're able to be with that stuff and how exact and clinical. It was impressive, but it was also just a bit disheartening that the game, which should be friendly, but with a competitive edge, has become just competitive with no friendly edge. That said, you know, most of my games that I played over the week were very friendly and I enjoyed them. But then most of the games that I played weren't competitive because I didn't do so well. So I don't know. I spoke to a few other people about it at the time and they had similar kind of views. But then again, the people I was speaking to were in a similar position. We weren't on the X and O tables. But, you know, we can talk to Tim about what it was like up there. When we talk a little bit more about the main event, I suppose.
Spoiler alert.
So, Sean, I've just ranted for ages.
Next section's content.
Yeah. No, it's why I kind of said, would you like to rant first? Because, you know, we did talk about this quite a lot, and it just started everything off at the wrong foot. It's just like, oh, great. So I'm at Worlds. There's loads of people I don't know. And you just told me that person's going to cheat and they're a horrible person. And there was almost like a slight smirk in Chris, in the head judge's voice, that just really got me the wrong way. So, I mean, when I went to the table, first game, I wanted to execute a move on the opposite side. I was in the middle of the bank. I just could not be bothered to reach over or call a judge. And I just went to my opponent, please, can you move it? I fully accept that you could tamper with it and just do stuff like that. And the guy laughed and I laughed and stuff. But it's just like, I felt like I had to like sign a contract to say that I accept that all my ships are going to be out of position because this person's a horrible person. It just put a bad taste in my mouth. It was just like, this is not what the community needs at all. Like I say, there are some logic behind it. I can see towards the top end, you know, like the people who are making cut and stuff. But I'm pretty sure that there's another way you can manage that problem. And when, you know, just like if both of you accept to move it, just let them. Because they were saying you're not allowed to touch it full stop. You have to call a judge. I mean, you know, if people can move them and they agree between themselves and they accept the consequences, just let them crack on. If you're not, then you call a judge. It was just weird. It's just
it felt like a broad brush approach.
Yes, 100%.
That was targeting maybe half a dozen players.
Yes.
So rather 100%. Than the judges going to those half a dozen players and saying, you've got a reputation, we will be keeping an eye on you. Please make sure that you play your games as clean as you have ever played them before. Or, you know, sanctioning those players when people make complaints against them. It felt like, literally, it felt like somebody just chucking a whole big thing of water over 107 people at the LCQ because they found out that one person was dirty. It's like, oh, yeah. One of you's dirty. Here you go, slosh. All of you can be wet, sort of thing. Weird analogy, but
maybe it was more for sort of the people who maybe don't feel comfortable calling out a judge when someone's bending those rules or pushing the luck a little bit. It just makes it easier for them to call it and not have it to be an awkward thing of going, I don't think you're going to move my ship right, calling a judge over. Do you know what I mean?
I get what he was trying to achieve. I just think that
it's just delivered in the wrong way, I think.
It was delivered badly and
it took
more away from the event than it added. Because it took the friendliness out of the event. And that's
I can understand that. But I can also see the route they were probably trying to take.
Yes. I just think it was executed wrong.
I honestly don't know what you could do to do it a better way.
No, so I mean that's the big issue is, like, if you, and it happens in any game, in any situations, if the two players do something and then they call a judge, the judge it's very hard for you as a judge to be able to say, well, this is the position it should be in, unless you're there from the start. So that's kind of what they're getting at is, don't touch anything, don't move anything, and we'll come over and, like, they don't need to move it. Like, they could just come over and let the players move it, and then if there's any disagreement on the final position, then the judge could say, well, actually, I think it should be a little way this way or a little way that way. I mean, I certainly struggled a lot with this ruling because I'm running a 7-ship list and I played several other, like, swarms over the weekend. So,
yeah,
you know, once two swarms crash into each other, I'm just like, I was joking with Tim, the judge Tim, that he may as well just stay by my table, because I was just like, and then this maneuver bumps, and then this maneuver bumps, and then this maneuver. I was like, and then I want to do this with this ship. And it's just like, you just stay there and just move all my ships with me. But I get the problem is, though, they've created their own problems. They had the issue last year where essentially a magical barrel roll and then it didn't fit, and then puts it back to its original position, and suddenly it's got arc again, or suddenly it now has arc. So they're trying to get through things like that, because when you've got one player saying it was in and one player saying it's out, and you weren't there for the original position, it's very hard as a judge to rule one way or the other.
Yeah, I mean, that thing, the things that happened last year were the reasons why this came around. And we're better not to dredge it up, because it was dredged up a lot over the course of the week. But yeah, it feels like proper floor rules that aren't just this kind of weird. It felt a weirdly bit power trippy, I'll be honest, the way that they phrased it.
The way it was phrased for me was pretty poor. From a player point of view, because then it was basically saying to me that they were saying if I move stuff and then call a judge, they'll basically rule against me. So then I'm like, well, I have to call a judge even for the smallest things, because I don't want them to rule against me.
Yeah, exactly. That I think that's the thing that a lot of people kind of realized was that, because that was the other part of the announcement that I've not mentioned, was that they said, you know, if you, like, if something's close to a rock and you put your finger on the rock and then you move it and then you call a judge, the judge will come over, and if they see you with your finger on the rock, they'll rule against you because you're the only person who could have messed up the game state. And you're like, okay, right, so I just don't touch anything. Like, they literally said, if we see you've touched stuff, or if you admit to having touched stuff, we'll rule against you. You know, well, what they said was, you won't like the outcome of the judge decision. So the judges had been told, rule against the person who has potentially interrupted the game state, not just look at the state of things and say, right, it's fine. So yeah, it was very odd. So anyway, that was that. And there's no point in continuing to bang on about it. LCQ, just to tell you how I did, I went 2-2, so it was all right. But I lost my first game against somebody who ended up going 4-0, so that was kind of fine, but disappointing. I then got the bye round two, which just sucked, like, because it was two rounds and then lunch, so I was then sitting for 4 hours not playing X-Wing when I travelled however many thousand miles it was to play X-Wing. So I was just, like, it was horrible, like, just horrible. Advantage, I was the first person to the prize wall because I was the first person to get 10 tickets. So I went and grabbed myself a pair of dice before anybody else could. So I was able to walk around and go, oh, look, dice to people, which was nice. But yeah, it was horrible. I then won my third game against...
Which almost got paired up against Ed Holmes.
Yeah, I nearly got paired up against Ed Holmes, which would have been hilarious for game three, having been on the bye game two. But they'd have to do a repair for some reason. And then game four, I got paired in. So I was 2-1. And I got paired into Andreas Karlsson, who is a really good player from Sweden. So he's one of Nicholas God's kind of regular opponents. And the two of them are incredibly solid, obviously. Andreas was in the LCQ because he hadn't won an invite. And he just... in his words, had the edges of variance when he had focus target locked, four dice shots, rolled three blanks back into three blanks again, and lost the game because of it. So he was fairly sad. We had a lovely, relaxed, fun game, great chat the whole way through it. It was brilliant. At the end of going 2-2, I came top of the 2-2s with a strength of schedule of 2.25. I didn't think anything of it until the end of the day when I looked at the strength of schedule for the rest of everybody in the entirety of the LCQ. And the next highest was 2.125, which was Nathan Idy, who came seventh on 3-1 and qualified for Worlds having come seventh. So there's this whole thing where if I'd have beaten Andreas and had the same strength of schedule, I would have qualified. And I mentioned it to him on the Friday or maybe the Saturday when I saw him. And he went, man, if I'd known, I'd have just conceded. And I was like, yeah, if we'd known. It was like, man, we should have done maths. I was like, yeah, oh well. So I feel like I got really close, but had I got through, like had I beaten him and got through, or had he done that, I would have just been like, I don't deserve this because I wasn't playing well. I wasn't making good decisions. I was flying a seven-ship swarm and I was just crashing things into other things all the time and not turning the right way and getting my turn zeros wrong. Like, I just did everything wrong. So if I had managed to look through the worlds, I'd have just felt like I didn't deserve it almost. I mean, I'd have taken it, but yeah. So that was my LCQ. I went 2-2 and one of my wins was a bye. So at this point, I'm on play three, 1-1, lost two. So I went well.
Well, you did better than me, so you know I went 1-3. But in my defence, my three games I lost it by like 2 points, 1 point, and 2 point. So those three games were all very close, down to the wire, and it's only a list I'd played twice beforehand. So I was happy with myself in that sense, but I don't think the 1-3 reflected my performance. I would have preferred it to have been 3-1. Then I think that would have been fairer. But I had a couple of... I knacked up my point scoring maths on one of them, which I thought was a draw, and I'd lost by the 1 point. And then I think I had some variance against his, because like all my plans were executed fine, did good. I was killing everything I need to, but my two B-wings were just... not really flying them in quite a long time, and I was just giving them up just too easily, and that's what kind of cost me the games. So 1-3, like, they're a bit disappointed, but like I say, I had some very good games. I was knackered by the end of it though, because it was an early start, still a bit of jet lag, but hey ho, kind of freed up the days ahead as well, so I could go to be a tourist, which was quite nice.
It allowed us to go to the Museum of Science and Industry. In the center of, well, not in the center of Chicago, in Chicago, and look at Lake Michigan. And spend $200 on Ubers.
There was five of us.
We still paid $200 for Ubers.
Yes,
because we split it five ways.
It was significantly further south than that. What I imagined, I have to admit. But yeah, that was quite good. Got to see a U-boat, which I'm sad. I got really very excited about it.
Yeah.
So that was our X-Wing tournament, all crash and burned at the end of day one on Thursday.
Yeah.
Did you play any more X-Wing at all?
Then on Sunday.
Yeah, signed up for Sunday. So there was a thing called Unconventional Warfare that was kind of $60 buy-in, and you were supposed to be able to play four games a day. And it was the only way to get enough prize tickets was to play the organized X-Wing events plus Unconventional Warfare if you wanted to get the kind of high-cost swag at the end of it. So kind of people were saying, so we have to play five rounds of Worlds on Friday and Saturday, and then after that play another four games if I want to get enough prize tickets. And there was like a lot of questions about, are we going to get more tickets in later rounds of Worlds? So if we're still in, like on day two, are we going to get more per game so that, you know, we can get better stuff to show that we've progressed further? The participation prize for Worlds was a Suntir Fel card with a, and I don't want to say misspelled, stamp on the back of it, but it was misspelled. The I in championship was missing. But that was the participation. Everything else was on the prize wall. The prize wall was mad, is the best way to describe it. We've had a rationale for why it was mad, but the pricings of stuff was just weird.
It was not what they communicated as well.
There was no acrylic tokens on it, which they said were going to be there for cheap as well. There were supposed to be acrylic tokens on it for like five prize tickets, dice for 10. The dice were there for 10, but there was nothing for five other than, I think, all dark cards and for some things. The Unconventional Warfare basically ended up being people just paid $60 and then at the end of every day went up to a judge and said, I've played four games, and they stamped it. So it was just literally, I'll give you $60, you give me prize tickets. But you had to get your prize tickets in four lots. You couldn't grind pods or do anything else. There was nobody checking to make sure that you were actually doing things or playing games or anything like that. It was literally just pay and get some stuff. I didn't buy into it because I got grumpy about the fact that it was all a bit mad and it just appeared to be pay to win. Kind of wish I had now, because then I could have had more dice and stuff to give away to people or to sell or whatever, but it doesn't matter. The prize wall.
You at least explore Adepticon instead.
Yeah, I did, but I'm not a 40k nerd, so I kind of walked around it once and went, yeah, this would be good if I liked 40k, and then that was kind of it.
I'm not 40k nerd, but I do like looking at the models because some of them are really cool.
Yeah, I went and looked at Golden Demon. That was really cool. Like just going and looking at the amazing models that are in the cabinet for like the games that I enjoy playing, because like I don't appreciate the skill that goes into it. And I spent a bit of Friday night with one of the guys who got a pin for one of his models that he submitted in, a Croatian lad called Ennis, who was really cool. And he was like talking to me about like, you know, his processes and all this kind of stuff. And he was really, really talented painter. And he got a pin, which is you didn't win, but you nearly did kind of a thing. And he was really happy. But like, that was cool. But like, after the fifth or sixth or seventh place selling 3D printed terrain or, you know, the same kind of stuff, it was just kind of a bit, right, I'm not into these bizarre kind of games like what's the word for them? Like tabletop,
like skirmish games.
Skirmish games and war games and stuff. Because there was loads of things where you could be like, oh, I could have a demo. And then if I like it, I could pay $100 for a starter set. And then I'd take it home, and then nobody else within three continents of me actually plays the bloody thing. So I was like kind of, I mooched about, and it was nice. But I spent a lot of my time, particularly on the Friday, I think it was the Friday, just hanging out in the halls who hadn't made it through. So I hung out with Funwalk and Dwight, who's one of the Canadian guys. At Louis Leong's prize wall, which was much better than the AMG prize wall, as evidenced by the fact that they took in over 1,000 tickets and gave stuff away to people, because people were like, well, I've got 9 sets of dice, so what do I want? Literally nothing. So I'm going to go over there and get some cool Beskar tokens or whatever. And they got rid of everything that they had. So, you know, they emptied. Just on the prize wall, I've mentioned that it was madness. So you could get an alt art card that was fairly boring for 5. You could get dice for 10. You could get a foil version of a regular card. So not a full art card, just a foiled, like, black one or whatever. There was about 6 of those. They were 20. And then suddenly it jumped up to like 50 and 100 and something for like bumpers. Now, the bumpers were cool. It was like a 6-inch by 3-foot mat that you're supposed to put basically along your board edge to put all of your cards and stuff on, so that it looks nice. And they were pretty cool, but they were kind of 150. There was like play mats for like 200. And then there were templates for like 150. So it was weird that dice were the cheapest thing. So you had people going, I've got 10 tickets, go and get a pair of dice. I've got 10 tickets, go and get a pair of dice. Yeah. It turns out people spoke to them afterwards and they priced them like that because they did a bit of research and they found out that people value dice most. Mm-hmm. So they priced dice as if they were participation. So basically, if you went to the LCQ and you played your 4 games, win or lose, you came away with 2 pairs of dice. So you could get the 2 types of dice that there were. And then the more games you played through Unconventional Warfare or Sunday Swiss or the team event or whatever it was that you played in, you could get basically more dice. Or you could say, right, I've got my participation dice, now I'm going to try and save up for something else. But like, once I got dice, I was like, I don't want anything else. So I just started throwing tickets at Funwalk and Louis and saying, give me stuff. And they were like, I'll take what you want. I was like, okay, okay. And like grabbing a few bits. Because, you know, there was nothing you could spend 1 ticket on. That was the other weird thing. I'm going to stop talking, I promise, after this. You got an extra ticket for winning a game, but there was nothing that you could buy that wasn't a multiple of 5. So if you had 24 tickets, because you'd won all 4 games in the LCQ, you had 4 floating random tickets. So if you then won another 3 games the next day, you suddenly had a multiple of 5. Cool. But then you had another 2 floating tickets. So there was a bit of a black market going on and people just giving other people cash for tickets. Mm-hmm. You know,
which I was partaking very, very hard in it, since I was fulfilling orders for Legion dice and Shatterpoint dice.
So the 186 Facebook groups. Yeah, the 186 ended up with a set of templates on, I think, Saturday afternoon. I think Dale arrived with a set of templates and started like divvying them out. So a lot of people that knew him kind of got 1 or 2 of them. And, you know, they had obviously pulled templates and, you know, bought templates and things from places, and not templates, tickets from places. Or that was my assumption. I don't know if it's true or not, or if they just, you know, pulled a big bunch of tickets between themselves to get the templates and then divvied them out. But it was a bit. The prize wall was weird, is the best way to describe it. It wasn't bad, but it was weird because everybody got dice and they got a lot of dice. And you've seen on the buy-sell groups how many people went out and went big on dice, because there's a lot of people selling pairs of Worlds dice for 50 quid a pair, like all over the place now. And the price is going to drop on them because literally they had buckets and buckets of them, and apparently this prize wall is going to travel to other events in the future as well. So yeah, it was weird, I think, is the best way to describe it, or from my perspective anyway.
No, I agree. I think to answer Ben's question about playing any more X-Wing, I mean, so you had the Unconventional Warfare, which you had to pay for. On the Saturday there was a doubles event which you got 9 points each, and then you played on a 3x3 mat. Apparently that was hilarious. That was genuinely a really good fun format, because you could take, like, you didn't have to be the same faction. So that was a lot of fun, what I could tell. And then on the Sunday, there was like 3 pods of 64 each, I think, that you could sign up on. And then essentially you would just, it was just like 3 rounds. But I think most people only played about, I only played about 2 rounds. Because by Sunday I was just knackered. But so you could play more, but there was no free space to play. Like, you couldn't just find a friend and just get a mat and just play. And, like, if I compare it to the Games Expo, where they have, like, a full hall of just tables and chairs, there was nothing like that at all. There was actually very few chairs in kind of non-tournament space,
which I found really weird. I forgot about that on the Friday. There was one table upstairs in the play space set aside for X-Wing. And there were empty tables up there, but they had reserved signs on them for people playing complicated war games involving like foot-long models of pirate ships and stuff, where they were playing like two games a day, but the games took 3 hours each or whatever. And there were these big empty tables just sitting there and you couldn't use them. And we weren't allowed to use the empty tables in between Worlds and Armada, because, or not Armada, whoever it was, Legion. Down our Legion, because they didn't want people playing casual pickup games next to people playing Worlds if they were on the bottom tables. So they were, and we were like, but dude, there's nowhere else for us to play. Yeah. We just want to play some games. And they were like, no, there's like a hard no. Like the X-Wing judges just were not having any of it. And it was like, eventually they went and found a bit of space at the back of a hall, kind of behind some 40K players, where there was a bit of room, and they slung a couple of mats down and you were able to go and play there. But by that point, I think a lot of people had just kind of given up and were just saying, I don't want to play these games. I just want the tickets. And if I don't have to play them to get the tickets, then why would I, sort of thing.
I mean, if we wanted to be really bad, we could have asked to have used all the empty spaces on the MCP and Shatterpoint areas, as you know, those weren't being used.
Yeah, there was a lot of empty 3x3 mats with downtown Gotham, or not Gotham, but wherever, on them. Yeah. Metropolis, that'll do.
Because if you think about it, kind of the hall, obviously it was a very big hall, but it was like 400 X-Wing players playing. There's 278 Legion players. Then there's about 50 tables set out for MCP and Shatterpoint. And then it was like all the streamings. So it was just a bit kind of weird. It's like, oh, your three main games take up significantly less space than one of the games we are perceived that you don't care about. It was just very odd.
No, it sounds, it's all fair things, I suppose, but at least you had a good time.
Yeah, I mean,
you didn't let the sort of the, you both obviously wanted to progress today too, so a little bit of a disappointment, but you still managed to end up having a good time either way.
The company was great, basically. Like, obviously just having a laugh with everyone was really, really good fun. And then obviously we got to support other members of the squad as well, which was also really, really good. But just the community obviously just really did make it an excellent event.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that the best thing about it wasn't the X-Wing, for obvious reasons, for me. I had a great holiday. I had a great time hanging out with my friends. I had a great time hanging out with people off the internet that I've never met in real life that I got to know, and meeting strangers and just like suddenly being like, no, you're a massive enabler and so am I. I'm off the chain. This is fine. Let's go. I only did it one night, but I had such a good night that Wednesday night. Like, I was like, felt like I was back in my 20s again. I was naughty. But, you know, that was an amazing holiday. I think had I done better in the LCQ, had I qualified through the LCQ, I don't know if it would have impacted the rest of the holiday, because I just got to chill out and relax and enjoy myself rather than constantly being stressed, because I don't deal well with stress and pressure. And if I'd lucked my way into Worlds, if, you know, Andreas and I had done maths, or if I'd beaten him and I'd ended up in Worlds, I'd have been sitting there the night before just going, I want to not fly this list that I've got. I want to fly something else because this isn't working against Endor. And then I've been going trying to find, you know, two B-Wings, an X-Wing, like trying to find somebody who hadn't qualified, who had a Rebel list that I wanted to use, kind of thing, and then pivoting last minute to go into Worlds with it. So, and then I'd have had a miserable time. So it was probably for the best, actually, for my own sanity, that I didn't do it. So
I think it's time to move on to Tim, who, as Rich spoiled earlier, did significantly better than Sean and Tim, I'm afraid. Sean and Rich.
Well, he made day one.
Yeah.
Unlike the rest of us.
Hey, come on. I had to fly to France to get my invite, so you know.
He was trying and struggling, weren't he? And then he just went and smashed it.
Well, so I think I only got to fewer events in the UK than I wanted to. So I think I tried 2 World's Open qualifiers in the UK and maybe 2 store champs, maybe 3 in the UK. I think three store champs. So I decided that, yeah, flying to Paris was a lot easier. Certainly it was a lot easier than the LCQ. I do not envy anybody in the LCQ having to go 4-0. It certainly is a tough ask. I think in Paris I lost a game in Swiss, so at least I had that I still made cut and then was still able to get the invite, so that was certainly a lot easier. But pleasantly surprised, I think, is I was hoping to make day 2 for sure, and I was hoping to do better than I did last year. So last year I think I did 6 wins, 4 losses, and to say I was shocked at the end of day 1 being 5-0 is an understatement. I think I'd beaten Nicholas God on the way there as well. So I think, yeah, you know, obviously taking Nicholas down and, you know, several other good players on the way to going 5-0 was great. Came back for day 2 and I drew Bartosz round 6. So it's like, you know, another real tough game. But managed to win that one, and then it's just like, this is going far too well. And then drew Duncan Howard game 7 and lost that game. So, you know, a bit of a reality check. I think I lost game 8 as well, in fact. So I'd gone, I think Rich made a post, I think the night before, something along the lines of how I'll be insufferable. And I said, well, I won't be if I tank day 2. Because that's it. If I go 5-0 day 1 and then go 6-4 or worse, then I won't be bragging, because, you know, obviously what could have been sort of thing. But managed to pull it back after my 2 losses and picked up a couple of wins. Unfortunately, game 9 was a slight mistake by my opponent. He didn't declare a target lock with his bomber. So when he came to shoot the bomber, unfortunately I had to say, well, there's no target lock out on the board. And he didn't declare the target lock action. And so it was a bit awkward. And in fairness as well, he had made a couple of mistakes in that turn. And I think I killed Jonas with 2, maybe 3 shots. Like, I know I did 2 shots that did 3 damage each, and he didn't roll any natural evades, and Jonas just died at initiative 5. So I think with that plus the target lock and a few other things, he just went, oh, I'm just too tired, and I made some mistakes, and he conceded. And then game 10, I was drawn against Tom Fieldsend, which was nice to play a fellow Brit in the last round, because, you know, it's going to be a nice game, if that makes sense. Like, you know, I've played Tom several times, so we know each other. Played on the England XTC team, so we know how we each play. And I was happy with the matchup, but I wouldn't say confident, because Tom was running his Ray Polist, and if I'm honest, I think Tom handed me the game by turning Ray away. I think he's possibly was in some sort of autopilot of where he does like the hard 3 and then he sloops away and then comes back in. But I think the worst thing you can do with Ray against a swarm is turn her away, because then my entire swarm just shot Ray, and just basically that was my win condition then, when Ray didn't have her front arc active. But yeah, very pleased.
We talked about it, didn't we, the night before? Because you said if I get paired into, because Tom had gone 5-0 on day 1 as well.
Yeah.
So he was obviously kind of in a happy spot. And then, yeah, I think he said there was 2 people he didn't want to be paired into, and you were one of them, because you were the other UK person on the bubble who had seen him flying his list multiple times at the STO. So if anybody knew what he was going to do and how he was going to do it, it was going to be you. So, yeah, I think it was rough, like, especially the fact that you went and mastered out after the fact and you realised that had you intentional drawn, you would have both ended up in cut.
Well, that was it.
So, somebody out.
So I was fairly certain, well, I knew that if we intentionally drew, we would have both had enough points to get through. It would have come down to strength of schedule. And Tom's strength of schedule was better than mine. So in that deal, I'm worst off if I think I can win that game.
Yeah.
And I was certainly walking into that game, I didn't feel like that was a bad matchup for me. I don't think it was a great matchup, but I was confident that I could win it. Therefore, if I was to take an intentional draw, if offered in that game, I was on the worst side of that deal. Mm-hmm. We both progressed, maybe neither of us progressed. As it turned out, both of us would have progressed.
Well, I mean, we talked about it at the time, and you just said, you know, I couldn't take the risk. It was like, yep, absolutely. And I think, Tom, like, while you were playing, I think once you'd pretty much secured the win and Tom had kind of broken out and, you know, he wasn't eyes in the game anymore because I think his brain had kind of gone, I've lost this now. He was kind of saying, oh, you know, maybe I should have asked you if you wanted to do ID and stuff. But I think he was of the same view that, you know, it doesn't secure it. So, like, just looking down the people who got top 16.
I mean, he might, he might have mentioned it at the start of the game in a bit of talking aloud, and maybe at that point I call a judge and we ID, which is obviously not the correct way to do it. But I think even if, I don't think I was ever going to offer him an ID, and I think if he offers me the ID, I would have declined it. And just let the game play out.
Yeah, so talking about IDs, you had a couple of people who went 7-2-1 and a couple of people who went 7-1-2. So the 7-1-2s were really just on the bubble. There was three people who got 7 wins, 1 draw, 2 losses who didn't get into cut. So Mega Silver, Matt Deering, one of the Aussies that we know from Tauntaun, and Nathan Idy. Nathan Idy intentionally drew his last game, his 10, thinking that his strength of schedule would be enough to get him in, and it wasn't.
Didn't he ID'd early, I thought?
Yeah, he did ID early, but he also ID'd and intentionally drew his game 10.
No, he didn't. He beat Tigris, which I think might have been Liam, but I'm not quite sure who that username is. No, he intentionally drew round 9 against Jonathan Grasser.
Okay. I'm there now. He didn't play Grasser in 9, he played Grasser in much earlier.
No. Nathan, round 9, draw versus Jonathan Grasser.
Oh, okay. Grasser, Akraman, then. Cool. Anyway, his IDs, he put 1 intentional draw in, which ended up knocking him out. The other interesting one was that the two people who were on 9 wins, at the end, or sorry, there was one person on 9 wins, and that was Duncan Howard. And then I think Roberto Mendez was on 8 wins and a loss at that point in time. And he went and sat down at the table with Duncan, and Duncan said, I'll offer you an intentional draw. And Roberto said, no, I want to play you. And Duncan said, okay, in that case, I concede. So he was on 9-0, so he didn't need a win and he didn't need a draw. He was already in cut. And he gave Roberto a nine win and 1 loss record as well. I'm not sure why he didn't want to play, but I suppose he thought he was through. So, you know, he didn't feel the need to play the 10th game.
So we were running really far behind day one. And I mean, I didn't get back to the hotel till 11 o'clock at night.
After
getting food. So
your registration was longer than ours even, wasn't it, for LCQ? Yeah.
Well, this is it. People. I think they started registration when game one was meant to begin. And I think if I was going into game 10 on 9 wins, I would have quite happily conceded as well and just gone, you know what, I'll take the drop in position, you know, perhaps take a worse draw in the top cut. But let's be honest, you know, the top 16, there are no easy draws. To get an extra couple of hours rest at the end of day 2. But day 2 was running a lot better time-wise.
Yeah, so day 2 ran better, and I think the only day that they actually managed to run on time was Sunday, because they only really cared about timing for 16 players.
I mean, like, talking about where you get in the draw, the first, second, third seed, so Duncan, Roberto, and whoever Sands of Blue is, that, I'm not sure if that's Liam, all got knocked out in the top 16. So, you know, whether or not you come top or not, it doesn't always help you out.
Yeah, I mean, like, you running down kind of the... If you look down, and it was the same last year when it cut to eight. But if you cut down the if you run down the people who made cut, and then you run down the people who missed out, and it's kind of like there's nobody weak there. We're going to talk about this next week when we get Ellie on. But you know, the players that were kind of right on the bubble of getting in, massive congratulations to, you know, to Tom Fields End and to Jack Johnson, who were right on the bubble and lost out in the last game. Jack had it down to kind of a handful of paint on a couple of dice. Kester Smith as well. He ran through really, really strong on day one, and nearly got over the line, but not quite. You know, there's a lot of names.
You got Greg Squires there in 20th. 21st, Fruitcake Bat. So I mean, that's it. 20, 21st, 22nd are all UK players.
Yeah, then 26.
Yeah, Jack.
And then, yeah, you keep going down, and there's a lot of very, very, very strong players who I recognise from kind of either days gone by, like XY. You've got Dom floating around there on the 7 wins and 3 losses as well.
Well, same with Farn, Nicholas.
Yeah, the top 50 was pretty savage. And even if you drop out of the top 50, you've got people on 6 and 4 who are exceptional players. Aurelien Corentin from France, and then you've got friend of the podcast and all-round amazing person, Eccentric, who's Ryan Coyle, who flew Chopper, Han, Sabine, and I think it's Keo through to 6 and 4 and spent the entire time being a bit, Tycho with Procket, spent the entire time going, I can't believe it, I'm doing really well. I was like, I can believe it, you're good. he flew Han, and I think he was the highest placed Han as well, which was nice to see. So, scrolling down, I think Reflex is Andrew Cox, who finished second last year, and he came 47th. So that kind of tells you the kind of the quality of the field. People going 6 and 4 are incredibly good players. People going 5 wins, losses and draws, still really good players as well. So yeah, it was all a bit mad, I'll be honest with you. I'm probably glad that I didn't play in actual Worlds, because it was, you know, Shark Tank right the way down to the bottom.
But that's what you should expect. Like, you know, Worlds this year very much was invitation only. I mean, all right, we did have a few store champs where invites did roll down a fair bit, but, you know, an awful lot of people have, you know, gone out, played in events, played in multiple events to go and get those invites. You've got people who've gone last chance qualifier, so flown to America, you know, with no invite and a chance to play in the event. So, you know, it was... much better than sort of last year. I think, was it 60 people progressed from the last chance qualifier last year? I think everybody that made day one should be, you know, incredibly proud of where they finished, and certainly anybody that made day two. It was a really good performance.
Yeah, I mean, it was rough just looking at some of the people who didn't even get out of day one. There's some very good players. Some very recognizable names, I should say, from times gone by, who didn't get out of day one. And it's, you know, just like, it's, there's no shame, inverted commas, to it. There's a lot of very, very strong players who just, you know, had a bad day. It can happen at any tournament. You know, you go 2 and 3 instead of 3 and 2, and you're out of the tournament. So...
Yeah, I mean, and it was a real slog of an event. Like, I played the pre-event warm-up, so I was playing 4 games alongside the last chance qualifiers. So I think by the time I got to the top 16, that was my 15th game of X-Wing in 4 days. So yeah, like those anybody that sort of played that many games and went further, you know, it's a keeping that brain going for that many games.
Yeah.
No, yeah. I mean, like so the space on day one was horrendous, and I think the same for the last chance qualifier. Like we,
was hideous.
I mean, like I pretty much had to play with most of my cards left in the sleeves, and I just pulled out the top of. Like the top inch of the cards that needed charges on, just so I could try and save space. But yeah, the space on day one was horrendous and really
it was hideous.
I mean, you know, you need a foot of space beside every mat, and it doesn't have to be a foot exactly. It could be 6 inches either side or however you do it. But you need some space beside the mat. Certainly at the moment, like unless you're lucky and you've got a list that's all standard loadouts, but even to like fit your template tray, I mean, I don't like playing with my cards in front of me because I've got a bit of a gut, and you know, if I lean over the table, I just knock all the tokens off the cards. So I always play with mine down the side. But I was very pleased to see the extra space we had for day two. You know, let me put my sort of template tray on the side. I mean, day one, essentially, I just emptied my template tray onto the table and just... I had to put the templates in that sort of runner space you had at the bottom of the board. But yeah, I mean, they really need to have a think about that for next
so
year.
I mentioned it to Chris Mitchell on the day, and he said, you know, they turned up on the day and said to on the day for setup and said to Adepticon, you know, how much space have we got? And they said, you've got this space for X-Wing. And they said, great. And they said, so, you know, you've got X rows, 12 in each row, that'll give you enough space for whatever it was, like 280 something people. And they were like, ah, problem is we're going to have over 300. So we need actually 14 per row that we've got, please. Can we have another couple of rows so that we don't have to squeeze them in? And they just said, no. So they had to basically they had the mats all set out with kind of a foot of space in between each one so that, you know, you'd have been cramped, but you'd have been able to put your stuff out somewhere into, I mean, there was literally 4 inches between mats, and then you had kind of the 3 foot by 6 inch space on your board edge. So there were people who had split trays or who didn't have trays who, you know, were able to cope more easily. But a lot of people just eschewed sitting down for using their chair as a place to keep their templates and their tokens and stuff. Most people figured it out because you had no choice but to figure it out. And then once the game actually started, once the engagements and stuff had gone into somewhere, you know, stuff spread out onto the table where it wasn't going to be in the way of things. But yeah, it was terrible, like genuinely awful. Like it was so cramped. And like there was a guy on, I can't even remember what round it was, but it was one of the games where the people on the table to my left had like a box of tokens that was exactly the width of the space between the two, but it was like a couple of centimeters. No, it wasn't exactly, it was like a couple of millimeters too big to fit in the gap. So he'd plunked it down so it was flush to their board edge, which meant it was overlapping our board edge. So I was like, do you mind moving that off? And he was like, I can't move it, it'll be on the mat. And I was like, but it's on our mat. So can you move it? And he was like, oh, sorry, I didn't realize. Like, yeah, no worries. But then like during the game, obviously they kept like pushing it and like things kept ending up on your mat. Like if you were playing right down the gutter edge, it was really frustrating experience. And there wasn't much space between the rows. So like it wasn't easy to get down the road to come up the other side if you wanted to go to the other side to move your ship or something, because as previously mentioned, you weren't allowed to trust your opponent. You know, you couldn't go around and look at things. You know, you couldn't say to your opponent, have I got Ark over there? Because, you know, they don't have your best interest at heart. So you needed to go and look to see if you had Ark sort of thing. So yeah, it was very, very tight. I didn't like how tight it was. And I appreciate that in big events, you have to have rows of tables, but just having that extra bit of space allows you to kind of lean it out to the edge of the board and like look down it. And things like that. But yeah, I think next time I might tell them that I've got a mobility issue so that they give me a nice fixed table on the end of a row. And then, or maybe pack a portable table with me.
So it sounds like you all had a great time though. Shall we talk a little bit more about just sort of the games after Tim, maybe. So Tim was top 16, was it?
Yeah, I mean, that's it. Like, so top 16, I got drawn against Andrew Prevost from France, which actually, looking at the draw, I felt I had a pretty decent draw because I was quite happy into the three arc lists. But we got chance engagement first game, and we've alluded to like the problems we had with the judges and movements. You imagine if you push a 7-ship list into a 6-ship list, we got 3 turns in our game. And it's just the amount of judge calls we had to make. And the problem I have is, like, so I've got Oddball V-Wing. So after he does a red focus, he can gain a target lock against something in his bullseye. So actually where I bumped mattered, because obviously I was looking for what I could target lock in my bullseye. It's less important for the arc because that's based on range bubbles. And that's a lot easier to measure. I felt like, so I had really good dice to start with. Like, turn one, so not even first engagement, turn one, I'd halved his jag. And that was just my V-Wings catching his jag out with his oddball sleeping at the back. So I was able to put some damage into jag early. I probably took my eye off the ball, not realizing how slow the game was going, and didn't, or perhaps wasn't a bit more clinical. And he had the 2 Y-Wing bombers, so he ionized. Ionized axe at one point, and I was going to do a bank maneuver, but I realized that I'd probably bump click, so I thought I'd change it to a straight, but I hadn't, so I ended up bumping with click, taking damage, and that gave Andrew the opportunity to halve click, and then that made the game really tight. And essentially last shot of the game, I probably, like, you know, odds on, you bet on me to win the game at that point. Just what I've got a 3 dice double modded shot to kill a 2 health oddball to win the game. And poetically, it was his 1 copy of dedicated that saved him and meant I lost the game by a point. But, you know, well played to Andrew. You know, it was nice to play another sort of friend. Me and Andrew have played a few times, and I've had quite a good year with the French team, you know, obviously traveling to France and, you know, spending time with them in Paris and stuff. So, if I was going to lose to anybody in the top 16, I'm you know, sort of happy to have lost to Andrew, and just a shame he couldn't go on further, because I think my list into Paul Heaver's list would have been interesting, because I beat Nicholas with a very similar list earlier in the tournament, so I would have liked to have seen if perhaps I could have gone further, because then there were a lot more 2 and 3 arc lists in the cut, and, you know, my list does tend to do fairly well, especially in other scenarios, but wasn't to be. I'm quite pleased how my list did. I think I definitely made the right meta calls, though. Dropping the 3 arcs, you know, taking killer, like, killer wins me some games, but then also just is like a magnet for damage in other games, because everybody's so scared of his ability and his 4 dice concussion missile, and then you're not shooting my other ships. But Audible V-Wing did a lot of work as well with his plasma torpedo. I was quite pleased with how that all went. Actually, did I even mention that? I'll say that now because I'm still recording. Guess what I won for making the top 16?
What was that?
I got 5 prize tickets and a medal saying top 16.
You mean the medal's cool?
I mean, it is, but am I going to wear it to events?
Yes.
No.
I mean, like when Dan won that wrestling belt, I'd have wore that to every event I went to afterwards.
But 5 tickets is what I got for making top 16 at Worlds.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. It was a bit disappointing that there was no sort of top-end prizes, you know, to make it special.
I mean, that's what I've fed back in, and that's my bit. So Worlds last year, although I sort of bombed out at the end, I still made top 32, and I got the Phoenix Squadron Damage deck. And that was awesome, and I now play with that, and that is something I look at fondly and go, oh yeah, I made top 32 at Worlds with that. And, all right, I've got this medal, but I'm not going to use it in my games. Like, I mean, it'll be very big-headed of me to use it as my first player mark or something like that.
It would be amazing.
But, yeah, I mean, that is my only thing, is like, And even if they don't do something exclusive, even just going, hey, here's 20 tickets or 40 tickets for top eight and 120 tickets for the top four. Because then you could actually go and get those template trays or template sets. And
so they gave Illy a template set and a tray, which just came off the prize wall. Basically, what he got for winning was five tickets and the trophy. And, you know, the fact that he'd played all those games of X-Wing, so he had a big pile of tickets anyway, that he then had to go down to the prize wall and trade in for the things that he wanted to get from it, so like dice or whatever. There was no kind of graduated prizes for doing better or for winning. There was no more tickets the deeper you got into the game. It was just, congratulations, you've won. Here's your extra ticket for winning and your five tickets for playing another round. And it was just like, oh, okay. So, you know, there's no swag to be dropped on the table that says, you know, I am the world champion. Here is my template tray with world champion written on it, or my templates that only the world champion got, like they used to be. It's kind of, you know, yeah, you've got some stuff. You were at Worlds. But somebody who went 0-4 in the Worlds qualifier and then grind games could have exactly the same stuff as you did. So,
yeah. So, I mean, maybe something for them to think about for next year.
Yeah. I guess we'll talk a little bit more about kind of the top eight, top four, top two, like next week when we've got Illy on as well.
Yeah. But, I mean, that probably makes more sense, doesn't it? Like, I mean, we've been going for 1:15 now. I don't know if there's more sort of general stuff people want to chat about, and we can perhaps leave top stuff for next week or not.
I mean, the I've talked a lot about kind of the bads, and there was a lot of organizational, I'm going to say, weirdness. There was a weird thing that happened. I have been corrected. I thought it was mid round three, but it was apparently somewhere between rounds one and two, or maybe just before round two started, where the judges got on the microphone and basically said, if anybody has any fan-made or third-party alt arts visible when we next do a walk round during this round, you will have an automatic game loss, which led to an absolute frenzy of people stopping reading their opponents' lists, stopping figuring out strategies and tactics, and flipping their cards. And also a small number of people frantically running across to the side of the room where there were people not playing, going, do you have a copy of Ferrosphere Paint? Because I've only got three and I need another one. So it was a bit of a weird time to do it. Like all of the run up to everything, you know, the whole thing has always been as usual. You can have fan-made alt arts, but just have the original with you. So that if we see it, we can ask you to see the original. And everybody says, yes, that's fine. And you understand that that's going to be the case. But for them to kind of announce it, not at the start of the day or not in advance of the tournament, but actually after a round has been played, and to threaten the sanction of a game loss if you've got a single alt art showing, if they walk past your table, just felt unnecessary to me. Like, I heard that somebody had got confused about somebody's alt art, thinking it was a different card looking across the table or something. And I thought, yeah, but really, that's not why you lost the game, is it? That, you know, thinking that R3 was an R4 or whatever when you looked across the table, that's not why you lost the game. But I don't know how much of it was that, or if there was an AMG thing, or if, you know, like somebody said it was because AMG wanted to go around and take pictures of people playing and they didn't want unofficial content in the photos or something like that. But like, whatever the reason, if that was the case, that should have been announced in advance of the event. You know, they should have said, just so you're aware, because this is Worlds and it's an official event and blah blah blah, alt arts aren't allowed when you're playing in Worlds. You know, you can have them, you can trade them, you can do what you like with them, but you know, when you've got cards down on the table, they have to be official AMG or FFG product. And everybody would have just shrugged and said, fine, cool, whatever, it's fine. And you know, the people who list build based on what their alt arts are would have been upset. But yeah, it was just, I don't know, it felt a bit odd. I don't know, did you have an opinion on that, Tim, or did you not care because you had no alt arts anyway?
No, I had my two Onyx Squadron click and boost, and one of the judges just walked by and went, you need to hide those. And I went, what? And I was like, I said, you know, they said the originals are just behind it. And no, it can't be on. So I was like, sure, whatever. And I just swapped the cards over. Like, Yeah, it was just unnecessary, really. Like, it meant nothing. My opponents knew what stuff was, but sure, whatever. I mean, this is it. Again, I feel like, and I get it from a judging point of view, you're just making your life as hassle-free as possible. I would have been very surprised if they would have given someone a game loss for it, though, but I don't know.
It felt a bit like they didn't know about proportionality, and there was a lot of kind of threats of massive sanctions, but it was unnecessary. And I think that's the word that I keep coming back to, is it was unnecessary. It was like the hugely complicated registration process where they made 300 people sit still for day one. Well, and that meant that they started 2 hours late.
And this is it. I had a chat with Chris Allen about this. And I said, look, you know, I said, Magic's been doing it for years with like events much bigger than X-Wing Worlds. And I said, you and your opponent, you can just look at, you exchange your two copies of your list. And then I can look at your list and go, yes, that is the same list, and sign it off. Because that's all the judges are doing, is making sure that it's the same list. They're not checking for legality. Like, I could have given, like, Chris Mitchell came and checked mine. I could have given him two illegal lists. And all he's doing is just checking that they line by line match. And it could have said all sorts on it. Now, sure, if they are checking lists later on, then, you know, I may fall foul of something later on. But if
nobody would have noticed until you were in Top Cut. Maybe day two.
Yeah, that's it. And I, you know, if it's just the fact, all you want that list is to make sure that both copies are the same, and you just sign it off. And you know, and if you feel like there's any cheating going on, then you can then say, well, if you check a list and it's not identical, you know, there could be a repercussion from it. But I mean, that would speed things up massively. Like, basically, you check both copies of your opponent's list, you sign both copies to say that you've checked that they are, you've not checked for legality, all you've done is to check that the copies are identical, and then you just pass one back to the opponent and pass one down to the end of the line. And that would take 5 minutes as opposed to an hour?
Or even just getting people to do registration like they used to for the 600-person system open, which isn't exactly the best example for running on time, but they always started round one on time. It was round three where they had the problem where half the room dropped because they'd got two losses. But like, you know, you literally walk into the room, there's a desk with somebody sitting at it with whatever computer system they're using. You say, I'm here, and there's a copy of my list. And they tick you off, and then you go in. And from that point, it is your responsibility to be at your table for your game starting, because you're an adult. And I don't know what it adds. As I said, it comes back to the word unnecessary. But anyway, I don't need to recircle the same problem. No, I mean, or the same thing.
So they are asking for feedback. So there is a link for submitting feedback. If you've been to Worlds and you've not had a chance to fill out the feedback form, I will share the link in the show notes. So you can by all means give your feedback. I think I may have done it twice by accident. But like, hopefully they take it on board. Hopefully we have Worlds next year, and you know, things like this can be learned from.
Yeah, I mean, just on the note and on the point that you've just made about if we have Worlds next year, so Sean alluded to it earlier on, that it was far and away the biggest event that was there. The XFFG games, so Armada, was on a different site because it was too big to fit in the hall with everything else. Legion and X-Wing were enormous. The AMG native games, so Shatterpoint and MCP, had quite a lot of space, but not a lot of people playing in it. I don't know if I just didn't notice when they had the room full of people, but they had like 50 tables each, so they had capacity for 100. X-Wing at 400 people playing in total, or just over 400 playing in total, was bigger than any of the other ones. AMG recognized that. They did an interview with Gold Squadron, I'm going to say round 8, something like that. So like halfway through one of the stream games, Will Schick turned up and said, hey, do you want to interview me? And they went, yes. So he made some comments basically about, you know, phase one has been a success. where phase one is something to do with ensuring the continued growth of the community and the continued popularity of the game. They see the invite process for store kits as a success because it's led to the biggest worlds that they've had for a long time, with kind of 300 and something people playing in the world's main event. So that's, you know, if you win an invite, then you want to go. They had a lot of invites out there. Something to be said about the fairness and the equality of distribution of invites. You know, we've talked about it a lot in the past. There was stores in America that had 3 or 4 invites. There were stores in the UK, like there were no stores in the UK that didn't have access to an invite, but you know, France got like 12, Poland got 2, Germany got, I think, 12, Spain got a couple. You know, it was like whole countries got less invites than single states in America. So, you know, they need to figure that out if they're going to continue with the model. So while they didn't announce anything, the overwhelming kind of vibe from AMG was, you know, we're pleasantly surprised with this and, you know, listen out. Now, we've had this week, I think a couple of days ago, Chris Mitchell has confirmed that there is going to be official OP at the UK Games Expo, which last year was the first Worlds qualifier. So it landed just at the start of the competitive season, and it was an absolute Wild West meta, and it was bonkers. But they have confirmed UK Games Expo as X-Wing. We've also had those previous announcements about the LGT running Sheffield, Nottingham, Reading, and London, though we've not heard anything about that since. So a lot of people were thinking about, if this is the last Worlds, then we're going to go and have fun. I don't believe that that will have been the last Worlds. I think that even if the game doesn't have a high volume of new content coming out, that they will continue to run, even if it is store champs into Worlds. And if that's the structure is, you know, you've got store kits and then there's Worlds, maybe Worlds qualifiers for bigger events, for things like UK Games Expo, PAX, Gen Con, whatever. But basically, I think that we'll still see AMG running an X-Wing Worlds at Adepticon next year. And I think that they'll do it through the same method that they did this year. The other kind of bit of evidence, in inverted commas, because it's not really evidence for that, is that Andrea, who's the OP person for North America, said that the prize wall will be traveling. So I mentioned it earlier. So there will be future events where you can grind tickets, where you'll be able to get those dice and those templates and those bumpers and whatnot. And maybe they'll add things to it. Maybe they'll take things off it. Maybe they'll change what things cost, but whatever. So yeah, I think that there is going to be more. And personally, I want to play more X-Wing now. Like, I think I need to take a break, but it's making me want to play X-Wing. Like, having been to Worlds and hung out with everybody and had such a good time, I just want to play more. And that's a good thing.
Yeah, no, I think I'd agree with that. Is like, I mean, I think I was saying before this Worlds that I may not be coming back next year anyway because I've got real life stuff going on. However, I am sort of a bit itching to come back, so we'll have to wait and see. I'm pleased to see that there is going to be something at Games Expo. Hopefully, we'll hear about what that is before May. That would be quite nice. And we have got obviously like Sheffield GT in August, I think it is. Yeah, it does worry me a little bit that obviously, you know, when we are going to have store champ kits, when are they going to be coming out and what sort of time scale and stuff like that. So, we just want to hear news, don't we? Just want to hear stuff so we can keep. And we had this last year as well. Like, there was such a big hype and, you know, big surge of, you know, positivity in the community following Worlds 23. And then it was just like a big lull, you know, and it's just like trying to keep that momentum going.
Yeah, I mean, this is the time last year when we released tickets for the STO and it sold out in a day. And we aren't quite ready to go at this point in time right now. But a lot of people in Chicago said, we really want to come over for the STO because we've just heard it's a really good event. So for anybody that I spoke to and introduced myself to, or who looked at me weirdly when they sat down next to me and heard my voice coming out of a person.
You always weird.
Well, I know. But it was weird because there were some people who I could see them kind of cocking their head as if going, I recognize that. Why do I recognize that voice? And then they looked across and they saw the team shirt and the name on the back and they were like, oh. And I was like, yeah, hi, yeah. And it felt a bit weird.
I think it's because of the assumption as well. Everyone seems to think you're small.
Yes.
When you're actually quite tall.
I'm quite tall and also wide. I'm definitely three dimensional. It was so lovely to meet people who like listen, and to meet people that I've played against online as well. Like the guy who put me out round one of the LCQ had played online like 2 weeks earlier. So I was like, yeah, I know your list. You smashed me with it 2 weeks ago. Let's see if I can do better this time. I did better, but not good enough. He took a minute to just go, oh yeah, that person I played on that thing. And it was like, yeah. So it was lovely to meet people. Like it was genuinely the nicest thing. And when people come up and, you know, said, thanks very much for listening, for doing the podcast, because we're kind of, I think, the only long running audio only podcast now. There's a few have kind of spun up, but basically, since Minox have stopped doing audio only and Gold Squadron have flipped over to video only, like once a week, and most of their listeners and their viewers watch it live, like I think we're a lot of people's default commute podcast, which is lovely. And yeah, it was super nice when people came up and said hello and often just handed me things and said, here's a thing, thank you very much. And I was like, oh, ta, thanks. I've got some things, but not much. Thank you. So it was cool.
Yep. No, I think I will echo that. I had some very nice people that I forget many names, but coming up and saying, you know, sort of thanks for the podcast and bits and bobs. So yeah, it's always nice to chat to people about the podcast. So thanks for listening. And what are we on, like 320 odd episodes now. So, I mean, we're obviously doing a lot slower since we've stopped doing like three episodes a week, but you know, I think we should hopefully be here till, certainly 350 is not out of the realm of possibility, and we'll just have to, fingers crossed that we get to 400.
Yeah, as I said, I mean, I was just talking about the STO. We are going to be releasing tickets in the next kind of hopefully 6 weeks. Ryan has already started work on the trophy for next year, so he's using us as an excuse to buy an assortment of different things to paint with. So he bought a flake gun today, which I had to Google it to figure out what it was. But yeah, I was very impressed when I looked it up to see what it would do. So we know what the trophy is going to be, and he's working on it already, which is frankly astonishing, because it means it's going to be ready way, way, way before we've started doing any other work on the event. But yeah, we're going to put tickets live as soon as we can. We need to sort out a few things with Element, and we need to sort out a few other bits and bobs as well, but as soon as we can, we will do so, and we will be announcing a go live date, so and then putting them live on that date. So instead of people missing out on tickets, we're just going to crash Element's website instead, so that's fine.
Cool. So I think for now I think we should call it a day, and obviously, we're having Ilion next week, aren't we?
Yeah. Hope so.
Yeah.
He's agreed to come on, so as long as the stars align, we'll be chatting to him next week.
Yeah. So we'll probably go into more details of Worlds then. What was you going to say, Tim?
Well, I was just going to say, like, we got Ilion, hopefully Ilion next week, and we can obviously just see how, you know, we can always do a third week of like top 16 list discussion and stuff if people want. Let us know in the Facebook comments or whatever. But if not, we'll see what we get through next week.
It would be interesting to take a bit of a dive into the lists, wouldn't it?
I think because there's
a lot of things that I didn't expect to see up there and things I did.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that's it, isn't it? Like we all said with the last points update that Republic Arcs probably like needed, you know, enough. It's that whole that meme where I'm like, am I the problem? Am I the bad guy? And and we all knew that Obol Arc probably needed fixing, and yeah, when you look at the top 16 and well, even look at the top four, and what you've got 8 arcs in 3 lists or 4 lists there.
Yeah, so top four was 3 Republic and a Rebel, so it was, yeah.
So
we'll talk about it next week.
but there are definitely, you know, some interesting lists to talk about in there, and perhaps we can have a bit more discussion about how Battle of Endor has affected that top cut, because I think that's interesting discussion points as well.
Yeah, definitely.
So move on to shout outs. Have you got anything, Rich?
Oh, I have got so many people who I want to shout out and mention, but I will forget somebody. I will forget somebody's name, so I'm not going to call out. I'm not going to call out anybody individual, but basically everybody who is in Club Mainstay Suites, everybody who I met from Tauntaun, from NCX, or from the Resist Tank. I had such an awesome time with all of you the whole way through. Anybody who came up and said hello to me, and I want to shout out the Chopico Squadron, who are Joaquin. So they're a Chilean podcast who record in Spanish, but Joaquin, who lives in the UK, is their special guest. And I met the guy on, I think, Sunday, and he was like, no, we listen to you and we get news from you. And then we basically translate it into Spanish and tell the Spanish community in South America. And I was like, all right, sweet. So, like, it was lovely to meet people who are other kind of content creators as well, who listen to and value the work that we do. And I'd love to say I'm going to listen to your podcast, but I don't speak Spanish, so I'm not. So,
And you're cultured. Yeah. Just make sure you're listening to it when someone comes in, you go, sorry, they can hear it and hear it in Spanish.
But yeah, no, so like a big shout out to them. And then, as I said, the all the people from the various Discord servers that I hang out in, and literally everybody else. Just all legends.
Anything from you, Tim?
Yeah, I mean, I think I've called out a few people as I sort of gone through. I would like to thank all the judges and TOs for running the event. You know, a lot of it is essentially unpaid, isn't it? Volunteers, and yes, they've had perhaps fights and accommodation, like funded or helped by and stuff. But you know, they've given up their time to run the event for us. So thanks to them for that. And yeah, just generally everybody. I think it didn't really hit me until after the top 16 game, and I was just riding on an absolute adrenaline wave like the entire event. Like I say, got to 15 games, and then I was just like, wow. But yeah, I will special shout out to Ed Gold for being awesome, driving people around, and being our point of contact in America. But yeah, there's loads of people I could thank, but you know who you are. I've done some Facebook posts and stuff. But yeah, just thanks everybody who came along and said hello. And sorry if I wasn't the most talkative. I do feel like I was a little bit zoned out at times when people came up and spoke to me, either like if it was between games or whatever, because I was very much at the business end of competitive X-Wing over in America. But although I wasn't, perhaps my social battery wasn't as fully charged as it could have been, I did appreciate people coming and saying hello.
So, I'm just going to shout out everybody who was involved in our league, because it's came to an end. Also, Pete Mancatello, I think that's how you pronounce it, but he sent us these dice that are like scenario dice, which is quite cool. You just roll it and it gives you a scenario. Also going to shout out Tim for technically being the best player in the UK right now.
There's no technically about it. There's no.
There is, because technically it's true.
No, until we have another UK Nationals or some other event, that is it. And yes, I will. I will not dine out on this. Don't you worry.
Also, shout out. Go on, Rich.
Get your little talking. He finished higher than the winner of the last UK Nationals at Worlds. So
I beat the last UK Nationals champion.
You did, actually, yeah. So
at one point I'd beaten the current world champion. So I think for some point before Illy won, I probably was the best person in the world until I lost my top 16 game. So
womp womp.
And also a shout out to go on, Tim, you gonna say something?
No, I was just laughing.
Just chuckling away. Yeah, jolly man, yeah. Chuckling. Yeah. The last shout out is to Chivers for being an all-around tip-top bloke. Right, so it's goodbye from me. Goodbye from Rich.
Goodbye.
Goodbye from Tim.
Goodbye.
And we'll see you all next time.
I think I was Top Tonton as well.
Yeah. Oh, actor.
The actor came below me.
Did he? In the end?
That was a lovely picture of me and Akhtar with our commiseration medals.